from South Dakota Public Broadcasting. This is your SDPB News Podcast. I'm Jackson Dirks. Today, we have the latest news out of Pierre as the first week of the 101st legislative session closes out. We'll also talk about the two sides of the Rapid City TIF debate ahead of the January 20th vote. It's Friday, January 16th. Here are today's stories. Larger amounts of unclaimed property dollars in South Dakota are expected to continue for a few years. That's what one of the state's chief financial officers says he's hearing. Unclaimed property is an asset that hasn't had activity on it and is considered abandoned. These range from uncashed checks, bank accounts, to even physical items and safe deposit boxes. After 3 years, the state manages the assets. Historically, unclaimed property receipts head toward the state's general fund, and a portion is used to pay individuals who reclaim the assets. The amount of unclaimed property receipts in South Dakota has increased every year since fiscal year 2020, with the largest spike coming in fiscal year 25. The state's receipts totaled $357 million. For FY26 to date, the state has received $242 million. Josh Hader is the state treasurer. He says there are two reasons. The first,
a couple of years ago, we did see a large holder, in this case it was a financial institution, move their charter to South Dakota. That's great news.
Hader says that financial institution should continue to produce unclaimed property receipts so long as the charter remains in South Dakota. He says the second reason,
we've seen a large influx in unclaimed property due to relocations from the COVID pandemic, and I'll explain why we're still seeing that. Remember that holders, in this case financial institutions, have 3 years to contact clients prior to that being abandoned and then turned over to the state.
Hader told the Joint Appropriations Committee that financial institutions don't expect that to stop just yet either.
They estimate that we'll still see a fair amount of COVID dollars coming in for at least the next 2 or 3 years. Those are their words, and so, you know, we're still seeing that.
During the 2025 legislative session, lawmakers passed a bill that would put a portion of unclaimed property dollars into a trust fund. Interest gain could be used to help pay off assets that get claimed. Currently, Hader says the trust fund acts more as a money market savings account. It'll be put to a state ballot vote in the future to unlock the full trust fund capabilities, though exact details aren't known yet on when that would be. South Dakota's top human resource official says state employees can expect their health insurance premiums to increase in the future. He told that to state appropriators. Darren Seeley is the commissioner of the Bureau of Human Resources and Administration. He says the state opted to increase out-of-pocket maximums instead of premiums.
So it's a reasonable move, and it's only for those folks who get to that level. It's not everybody. The reason we didn't do that is because with premiums, everybody pays more. And when you don't have a salary increase and everybody pays more in premium, you're taking home less money in your pocket. This way, only people who have to use the system and the service have to pay more.
Seeley acknowledged the governor's budget outline, which provides a 0% increase for state employee salaries. He says this year, the state is eating into a health insurance reserve fund to keep costs low.
We think one time you can do this. If we go with this budget this year, this probably won't be the recommendation next year, because you're not going to want to get below where we're comfortable.
Seeley says long term, he thinks the state needs to increase the employer rate to have more revenue for the plan, as opposed to using reserve dollars. SDPB employees are state employees. America is reflecting on 250 years in 2026, and that means different things for different communities across the nation. For State Supreme Court Chief Justice Stephen Jensen, it means a moment of reflection on the American court system's history. Hear it in his own words from his State of the Judiciary address to the South Dakota Legislature.
This year, we will celebrate our nation's founding. We will retell the stories of the vision and courage of early American leaders who drafted the Declaration of Independence, fought in the Revolutionary War, and set the nation on a course toward a representative democracy. In that spirit, I want to take a few minutes to talk about the history of the state courts and their significance in preserving the liberties we have enjoyed for more than 250 years. Years before our nation was established, before the Declaration of Independence, the United States Constitution, or the federal courts existed, the American colonial courts, the forerunners of our contemporary state courts, were formed to maintain order and resolve disputes in the growing communities throughout the colonies. The courts were the primary guardians of the rule of law during this time. For those living in what would become America in the 17th and 18th century, justice was not something that happened in distant capitals. It happened in local courthouses. These early courts were influenced by English common law, reinforcing the importance of legal precedent and the development of legal codes and statutes so the rules were to be applied fairly and consistently in every case. As many colonies began to distance themselves from the king and British rule, tensions developed in the court. Would the courts be loyal and subject to the influence of the crown, or would the judiciary remain independent and decide cases based upon the rule of law? Trial by jury was one of the primary means by which the colonial courts began to develop independence from the British crown. Jury trials allowed citizens drawn randomly from within the community to make decisions in cases based upon the rules and facts presented during the trial. One of the first major tests of this independent court system took place in Massachusetts following the Boston Massacre. On March 5, 1770, British soldiers fired into a crowd of several hundred colonists protesting the increasing presence of soldiers sent by Great Britain to quell the growing rebellion in the American colonies. Five colonists were killed, and the outrage of the colonists and the local newspapers was swift and immediate. The soldiers were widely presumed guilty. The public demanded justice. The captain and eight British soldiers were charged with murder and scheduled to be tried in a jury of local citizens in a Massachusetts court. As one might expect, the British soldiers had a hard time finding an attorney to represent them in Boston, as defending them carried enormous political and personal risk. But then an unlikely lawyer stepped forward to represent the British soldiers, John Adams, the man who would become our second U.S. president, and one of the Committee of Five, selected by the Continental Congress a few years later to draft the Declaration of Independence. Adams was fully aware of the difficulty these men faced in obtaining a fair trial. The British captain was tried first. He was acquitted by an independent jury based upon the testimony of several eyewitnesses who stated that the captain had not fired his weapon and had not ordered the troops to fire into the crowd. The other eight British soldiers were later tried on murder charges and were also represented by Adams. Following 6 days of testimony from dozens of witnesses, a jury found two of the soldiers guilty of manslaughter after hearing testimony that they had fired their weapons while being pelted by rocks and snowballs. The jury acquitted the other six British soldiers based upon the absence of any evidence that they had fired their weapons into the crowd. In his closing argument to the jury in the second trial, Adams argued, quote, "Facts are stubborn things, and whatever may be our wishes, our inclination, or the dictates of our passion, they cannot alter the state of the facts and evidence, nor is the law less stable than the fact." Adams' words are just as true today as they were in 1770. The courts remain committed to deciding cases not on the dictates of the powerful or upon the often fleeting impulse of public opinion, but based upon stubborn facts and the equal application of the law. The lesson from John Adams and the Boston Massacre is clear. The strength of our society is measured not by how it treats the favored, but by how faithfully its courts administer justice to every person, regardless of external pressure.
Legislative coverage on SDPB is supported by the South Dakota Bar Foundation, SDN Communications, Missouri River Energy Services, and your membership in the Friends of SDPB. Thank you.
With the TIF district special election just a few days away, Rapid City community members are taking advantage of public meetings to learn more about the proposed destination district that includes Liberty Land USA. The School of Mines Student Association Senate hosted a public forum with panelists from both sides of the debate. Tanchi Weaver of No Free Rides encouraged a no vote on the Destination District TIF. She cited concerns ranging from project transparency to the potential that Liberty Land will hurt traffic to downtown Rapid City.
I worry about hollowing out what we've accomplished with other TIFs over the years. The downtown is a very viable place. It is a high-performing part of our city. And we have spent a lot of money and a lot of effort to draw people into the heart of our city. And I'm afraid that that is going to be negatively affected if this TIF does pass.
Meanwhile, Joel Brannon, the project manager for Libertyland, argued that a vote yes for the TIF district will create significant new tax revenue for the city, reducing the tax burden on residents.
We're looking to bring in somewhere between $4 and $8 million annually into the city coffers. That's more than most projects that we've reviewed have proposed to bring in. So I think that based on the economic studies that we've done here, and even though we're being accused of not sharing some of this economic data, this is a private business. This is a private project. This project is in no way is a risk to the taxpayers. The developer borrows the money. The developer is responsible for repaying that money. The taxpayers at no time are at risk.
The Rapid City Special TIF District election is January 20th. Early and absentee voting is now open. A pair of South Dakota newspapers have a new regional owner. Fargo-based Forum Communication this week purchased 7 newspapers across the upper Midwest, among them the Madison Daily Leader and the Pierre Capital Journal. The official transition date is February 1st. Forum already owns several news media organizations in the state. That includes the Mitchell Republic, News Center One in Rapid City, and Sioux Falls Live. And that's your daily news update. Make sure to follow us on Facebook, X, and YouTube at SDPB News and visit sdpb.org/news to stay up to date on our journalism as it comes in. As always, thanks for listening.